The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
Good afternoon. Welcome into our program. Great to have all of you with us on a Wednesday. And man, we are jam-packed today with some major guests, including 2 hours from now, we'll talk to the head football coach at Florida. Also talk to Kirk Herbstreit. But let's get started with some headlines from around the league. And Nick Saban takes center stage, as one would expect him to do. He hasn't found his leaders yet. Wow, does that sound familiar? Nick Saban in search of leaders. Did he say this last year or the year before or maybe the year before that? Yeah, that's what Nick Saban says. He is challenging his team, and he wants somebody or somebodies to step up. Nothing has changed in T-Town. What about Auburn? Bo Nix, still around. Yes, he's somewhat forgotten, but not for long. Brian Harsin knows Bo Nix is a man of experience. In fact, if you look at the returning quarterbacks in the SEC, nobody has more experience than Bo. Bo knows. Matt Corral, next. Ken Seals, yep. Mark that name down. Connor Bazelak, the much maligned Will Rogers, TJ Finley, JT Daniels, the list goes on and on. But nobody has a lot of experience. I think that would be a major understatement. We talked about the FPI yesterday. Meanwhile, today we talk about schedules. Who's got it tough? Because the schedule can often dictate how you do. All the conversation about looking good or not. If you got a bad schedule, you could be in trouble. And who's got the toughest schedule in the country? Hello, Brian Harsin. You have a murderer's row. Penn State at the beginning, Alabama at the end, and quite a few choice teams, including Georgia and LSU, and you bet, plenty more thrown in. Arkansas is not in great shape either. So the Auburn situation is it's fine. Brian Harsin has a free year to play with, but the schedule is going to really challenge them. And I think some of the experts, 7-5, 8-4, I would be surprised if there's a consensus beyond that. I mean, you may get some locals who know more than we do, but right now you're not going to see a lot of high-flying projections for Auburn. And we saw that yesterday when Seth joined us with the FPI. Let's move on. The NCAA is expected to approve the one-time transfer rule, that according to sources. This is much and hotly discussed and debated, but it's something the college sports felt like it was needed, and now that it is here, we aren't going to see as many conference angst as we used to. Meanwhile, the AAC is allowing players to transfer within the league without losing a year of eligibility. I applaud that. I don't know why everyone else gets so bent out of shape over that, but they do. We talked to the commissioner a couple of days ago, Mike Oresko, and I frankly think it's time for everyone to go this route. I mean, there's just so many bad feelings and so many people, like we saw last year. Remember, Tennessee was waiting for the green light from within the league. My feeling is, if you don't want to be somewhere, let the guy go. Get over it. Let's move on. And we have a couple of other things to talk about, including the fall. A lot of people are asking us, what's the fall going to look like? It's going to look normal. According to Scott Strickland, Gators will be at full capacity. Now, some states are different. Florida is one of those states that has really never completely shut down. So it's not a surprise that they will be, along with Texas and maybe others. Dan Mullen, who got into trouble last year for talking about crowds, will join us later in the show. Seth Emerson from The Athletic covers the Dogs. Dr. Mickey Allen has been with us before, and he will talk about his big hire, which we talked about yesterday, Eddie George. I was talking to somebody in New York today, and they said, hey, what do you think about Eddie George joining college football? Kirk Herbstreit later, as well as Mike Tannenbaum, the former GM of the Jets. Don't hold that against him. Or the Dolphins, do hold that against him. He's now an ESPN analyst. And we will get to your phone calls before the guests start piling in here, and the phone number is 855-242-7285. And let's check in with John first. John, good afternoon. Welcome. How are you.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. And by the way, Emily made my day when I called in. Maybe someday you can introduce the entire back room there. They do quite a good job. But
well, thank you. I'm glad you mentioned Emily, because Emily is up in Connecticut. The rest of us are farther south. And she has, I think, one of the toughest jobs, Emily Heibel, one of the toughest jobs, because most people like you are perfectly polite. They're cordial. They enjoy conversing. And then you get that outlier, that guns a-blazing, if you don't put me on the air, I will ruin your career, ruin your life, and send your family pictures of you, stealing cookies when you were 3 years old. But thanks for saying that. Really appreciate it.
Well, I introduce my name each time where I am, and then I always mention the subject, and I said, and I have a nasal voice today with allergies, and I said, yeah, I want to talk to Paul about the FBI, and there was a pause, and then she said, FBI, what did he do wrong?
Sure. You know, usually the people on the very front line and the people that talk to the, they usually know, because frankly, if the FBI was looking for me, they would call the phone lines first and say, where can we find him?
Yeah. Well, I have a question, but I just want to mention one other thing real quick. I think it was Monday. You were reminiscing about the old callers. And so I get in and out of my car most days. So I heard you being nostalgic. And then I get back in the car, and it's Jeff doing his best version of Rain Man. And I just thought, wow, what an encore. What an introduction you had. If you come in and out of your show, it's kind of fascinating.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a radio programmer, and I've had to deal with them most of my career, which isn't pleasant. But I think it would be a good positive show to get Jeff and the other guy, the one that he always talks about, and have them do a show and talk about the misery of the world and how everything is terrible and how we're all...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
That would be a very uplifting show.
They could dissect the difference between Justin Fields' lumber and the Suez Canal in one show.
Right. Well said.
Anyways, my question to you is, I heard the... I think it was Seth did the explanation of the FBI again, and then I'm using Mississippi State as number 8, and I just didn't understand his explanation about ability. And, well, they're still going to be an 8-4 team. It just didn't make sense to me. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I will tell you, it didn't make any sense to me either. Because if you have an 8-4 record, you're not going to be in the top 10. Now, what he was trying to say was this: that Mississippi State with an 8-4 record would still be in the top 10. From a power ranking standpoint, and to that I say bunk. I don't believe that either.
Show me your algorithms is what I say. Yeah.
I think, I've never been a computer programmer, although one of my roommates in college was remember back in the mid to late 70s, you take the long thing and stick it into the mainframe computer.
Yep.
I don't understand it, but somebody was drinking too much the day they came up with that program.
It had a virus out of China, no doubt.
Or somewhere. Hey, thanks, John. Really good to hear from you. Always a pleasure. And let's check in with Ray, who is in Indiana. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy?
Ray, we are great.
Hey, I wanted to bear with me for a minute. I helped Kurt Warner get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Believe it or not, I found these shoeboxes down to Lowell's 50, 60, and 70, 50, 4 years ago, 50%. Mm-hmm. I got 90%. I sent them to him. He autographed, typed the letter up, and sent it back to me. I was just wondering, is there any chance you could get him on there? Because this movie's supposed to come out. It took 8 years for this movie, Underdog of America, Kurt Warner story. They had to kick it back a year because of the virus, but it's supposed to be out December 10th of this year. Is there any chance you think you could get Kurt Warner?
Yeah, I happen to know Kirk's agent pretty well, and I think I know how we could find him. So we will work on that. Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Hey, one other thing before I leave you: how the world did Jim Harbaugh get 4 more years at Michigan, and then they give the athletic director 5 more years, and they've been terrible since 2006, and the athletic director says he don't have to win or lose games. That ain't got no bearing.
Yeah, I don't know if you're a stock trader or not, but when you short a stock on Wall Street, that means you're betting it to go down. For some reason, Wade Emanuel must have Jim Harbaugh failing even worse than he's already failed, and that's how he gets his golden parachute. Makes no sense whatsoever. We're heading to a break. More to come. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285 and some guests around the corner. We're up and running here on a Wednesday. Stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Quite a few games to partake in coming up here this weekend. Mississippi State, Vandy, LSU, Auburn, Georgia, Razorbacks, all available on the SEC ESPN Plus channel. Back to the calls we go, and Joseph is up next in Florida. Hello, Joseph. Well, that was a good call. Oh, wow. I know the feeling being hung up on. Dwight is up next in Georgia. Hello, Dwight.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing well.
Hey, I don't know if you saw the new law that was passed in Florida, but Florida State has passed the law that the players can get paid through the new regulations of the state.
So what? So it has to do with paying. What does the legislation say?
It's the endorsement.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. For the NIL. Yeah, I did see that.
It says a new law will take effect on July 1st in Florida. This law will allow college athletes in the state to make money from endorsements.
Correct.
That's going to change the game, Paul.
You're right. But here's the deal, Dwight.
If you're a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid, and you can make endorsements from Nike, Under Armour, I mean, where are you going to go?
Dwight, remember one thing though. Georgia may have been first out with that, and they were. But by the time we get to that moment, there will either be one or two things going on. There will be court action that will prohibit them from moving forward until there is a resolution, or there will be a national bill passed in Congress, which I'm betting on.
Well, it's already passed in the state.
But you don't understand, though. The federal government can supersede that, though. And just don't be concerned. Florida is not going to get an advantage over anyone because the Georgia legislature can go in there and do the same thing if it wants.
Right. Well, I just saw that this whole the state of Florida. So let's put in the Gators and the Hurricanes.
Okay. Well, I think you just have to be patient on that. I know you don't want to be. David is up next. Hello, David.
Hey, Paul. How you doing, buddy?
We're doing great. Thank you.
That's good. You know what's good coincidence is going to have Dan Mullen, Coach Mullen, on at 5:15, 5:30. Is my question is, and I doubt he's listening, but he just calls in a few minutes before. It's and I am a Gator fan. Is what is it going to take the Gators to get to the top tier in recruiting, being with the Georgias and the Alabamas, Ohio States, and the top tier? I mean, that's what I'm waiting for. I know he's always wants to. He uses these catchphrases of, you know, he wants to build for championships and have, you know, a tough schedule. And you just posted that Gators are not even in the top 10 as far as the tough schedule. I'm waiting for that where five stars are just, you know, being, you know, lining up like a waiting list to be in the swamp. That's what I'm waiting for. And I'd just like to get your take on that, Paul.
Well, I think you've made a good observation. Florida has not recruited at the same level as Alabama and Georgia. I think they came closer this past year, and I know they've also done very well in the portal. But that has been a major issue, and we brought it up a couple of times here in the past. And
right,
it needs to be resolved.
And there was one thing that I was hoping for, but nothing against the new quarterback coach, but once Brian Johnson got promoted, I was always thinking in the back of my mind, it would be nice to have a quarterback coach if Tim Tebow. Now, that would get you some recruits, but, you know, they went a different avenue and with this new selection, and that's
well,
fine.
But let me answer that question. Tebow has shown no interest yet in coaching. Remember, he started this season off attempting to play baseball. He moved on from that, and I've had conversations with Tebow about this, and I frankly have encouraged him. Not that he needs me my advice, but I think he should. I've always thought he should go one or two ways. I thought he should go into coaching, or coaching politics, or the ministry. And he told me, he said, I'm already in the ministry, and he is really in many ways, not conventionally, but somewhat unconventionally, but he did not want to get into politics. In fact, I had a friend who asked me to contact him a couple of years ago. They wanted him to run for either a congressional seat or something even more. And, you know, Tim got married a year ago. He just has shown no interest in doing anything other than what he's doing right now.
Right. But thank you for the call, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I don't think there's any question. Tim Tebow is the offensive coordinator of Florida would be a pretty big deal. Jack is up next in Mississippi. Hello, Jack.
Hey, bud. Glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
One thing, I was very elated to find out my Ole Miss Rebels were number 22 in the country with the FPI until I looked up the list, and we would be 1-5 in our own division. The other thing, you talked about it before, the Ole Miss-Notre Dame game where Steve Sloan was the coach and upset the number one team in the country.
Right, in 77 or 8. Okay, yeah, 77.
Well, one of our fraternity brothers' father was a meteorologist, and it's 103 degrees that day, and it played in Jackson, Mississippi, and the football field is east to west, and the temperature is like 103. Steve Sloan started the second team. When you look at the two football teams, it looked like a professional football team from Notre Dame. It looked like junior high team from Ole Miss. He started the second team for the first part of the game. And at the end of the game, people started falling out. There were over 550 players because of medical centers across the street. 550 people were taken there, including six of the Notre Dame football players. And we call that game a good hospitality of Mississippi Southern fried chitlins.
You know, Jack, I remember that game very well, and I never knew why, because I wasn't there. I never knew why Notre Dame lost that game, because Notre Dame won the national championship that year. Terrence is up next, and Terrence, what's going on with you?
Hey, how you doing, Paul?
We are doing great. Thank you for the call.
I was just calling to ask you, what do you think about Bo Nix at Auburn this coming up season? And is he already going to be the starter going forward, or is it an open competition with the other quarterbacks?
Well, Terrence, in theory, it is an open competition. And, you know, that's all coaches say that, especially a new coach. But I would be surprised, and I don't know what you would think, and I'm curious if Bo Nix doesn't end up starting. I think he's a very qualified. I don't blame Bo Nix as much as I blame the coaching of Bo Nix the last 2 years.
Yes, I agree with you on that, Paul.
He will have his third offensive coordinator in 3 years.
Correct. So my next question for you is, if he is the starter, right, how many games do you think they should give him before they try to move forward with the future?
Well, I certainly would get him past the Penn State game, which is the second game of the year, because I would not want an untested quarterback coaching, trying to navigate that. But I think it's just one of those things that you know it when you see it. You have to give him a chance. And if Auburn is having a bad start and somebody else is progressing, then I think you make a move. Hey, thanks for the call. We are heading to a break. More of your phone calls right around the corner at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And we're back, and Seth Emerson joining us right now from The Athletic. He covers the Dogs. Seth, good to have you on. Let's get right to it. We are we're well into camp, and the speculation continues to be rampant about the expectations for this upcoming season. How are you, and what have you learned so far during the camp?
I'm doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me on. You know, here's the thing. The biggest news happened early in camp with George Pickens' injury. Before that injury, my position was that if you looked at everything Georgia had coming back, you would say this is a preseason number one and number two team, unless you knew that it was Georgia and you kind of had preconceived notions that this is Georgia, something bad will happen to them. Kirby Smart can't, you know, get all the way, blah, 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 blah. And then something bad did happen to them and George Pickens got hurt, which I think it's a big deal. I don't know that it completely ends their championship hopes, but it's not something that you just dismiss. That casts a pall over things. On the other hand, Paul, I think a lot of teams may be in this position, but I know Georgia is. They're practicing right now with basically the team they're going to have in 2021. They have 16 early enrollees, so they only have four signees that they're waiting on, plus Tyke Smith, the grad transfer from West Virginia. Otherwise, they've got a really good head start on their season, and they need it because they're opening with Clemson.
And I want to talk about that game for a minute, Seth, because it seems like it's both an opportunity and also a negative challenge, an opportunity to beat Clemson and have everybody in the country talking about you, and also maybe have a free game to burn somewhere down the road, or if you lose that game, there's no room for error. How do you view that opening game?
Well, I don't know that I agree that there's no room for error, and that's why I think that Clemson and Georgia are eager to play each other as often as they can, and that's why Kirby Smart has been out there scheduling Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma in 2023, Texas, Florida State, Louisville is the latest, that the way they view this is very early in the year, you either bank a marquee win, a signature resume win, or you lose a game, but it gives you a barometer to say this is the type of team we're going to play if we need to win it all. And so we now see what we need to get better at. And B, it's a non-conference game, so you can still then go make the SEC championship. It doesn't, you know, you still can, you can lose to Clemson and you still control your destiny. Now, it depends on whether it's a convincing route that just leaves a mark for the rest of the season, or if it's a close kind of game that people go, okay, you know, Clemson won that game, but Georgia's still good. And if it's a close kind of game, I'd argue you could still go lose one SEC game, assuming it's not the wrong one, and you could go into Atlanta 10-2 and be in a win and in position, depending on what the rest of the playoff looks like. Now, that may look like a too optimistic, rosy kind of scenario, but I don't think you're left no margin for error if you lose that kind of a game at the start, which is why Kirby Smart's eager to keep scheduling those type of games.
Seth, on that front, I understand where you're coming from. To me, though, I mean, there's also a curse if you win the game, because I mean, let's play this out for a second. Georgia wins that game, and what's it going to be like in Athens the next day?
Exultant, very, very happy. The way it was in 2014 when they beat Clemson to open the year, the way that it wasn't in 2011 when they lost to Boise State to open the year, the way it wasn't in 2013 when they lost at Clemson to open the year. I think what coaches really like is they like that you're opening, you've got a game that has everybody's attention in the off season. And so you should be giving you should be getting everything you need from your team in the off season. Now, yeah, there's a possibility for a letdown, but Georgia's schedule isn't exactly that difficult after that. I think their two hardest games on paper as we sit here are against Florida in Jacksonville, a Florida team that is not going to be the same team that it was in 2020 when they beat Georgia, and at Auburn. And we don't know what Auburn's going to be with a first-year coaching staff. So it's not like there's many landmines in Georgia's schedule this year. And I think they'll take winning that game and then dealing with the overconfidence. That's a problem they'll take.
Yeah, and the Auburn's always on the schedule, and Arkansas is the other game from the West, and I think I might take Arkansas over two or three or four of the other ones that you could choose from.
Yeah. Yeah, and the game's in Athens, unlike last year. Georgia doesn't get – I mean, look, I'm very bullish, Paul, on Georgia in 2021, but the schedule is a big reason for it. I mean, if Georgia was in the West – and you're talking about not only Alabama and Auburn, but Texas A&M, which could be really good next year, and LSU, which is usually very good. Ole Miss can be dangerous with that offense. Mississippi State, if you get Mike Leach on the wrong day, can be really good. Arkansas looks, they were better than we expected last year. I mean, I would look at Georgia's schedule if they were in the West and say, yeah, there are some landmines there. But in the East, Paul, I mean, Georgia's tier one, Florida tier 1AB, however you're looking at it, there's a huge drop-off. I mean, Missouri and Kentucky are probably the next tier. And then South Carolina and Vanderbilt and Tennessee are all working in new coaches. So it's just I think it's a great year for Georgia to have Clemson on the schedule, because they potentially really need that game if it's a close resume situation and just from a competitive standpoint.
Seth, finally, let's talk about Pickens being gone, because it's possible but not likely we're going to see him again until the end of the year, if then, maybe never, at least in college. How does Georgia overcome the loss to arguably its most explosive player?
You know, the thing with Pickens was he's not just one receiver. Now, Georgia is deep at receiver. They've got some really good options, especially if they get everyone back healthy. Marcus Rosemead, Jack Saint, and Dominic Blaylock are coming back from season-ending injuries last year. And Jermaine Burton and Arian Smith suffered spring injuries, but Arian Smith's already back. And Jermaine Burton, who had a hyperextended knee, he looks like he's back. Those four guys I just named, there aren't many teams in the country that would trade who they have or would not trade who they have for those four. Plus, Georgia has Demetrius Robertson and some other guys. But Pickens was the guy that, as a defense, you had to worry about. He was the guy you had to game plan about. He's a guy that you not only had to have a cornerback on, but you probably had to have a safety or some sort of help. And it made everything else on the offense better. The one advantage is the wrong word, but the one upshot of the injury is that it happened now. It happened early in spring practice. I've said this before, Paul. Georgia last year had something happen to it with Jamie Newman's opt-out that happened in the preseason. There wasn't much time to adjust. And in 2019, I think the key event was over the summer when Jeremiah Holloman was suddenly dismissed from the program. Receiver ended up being the big weakness on the 2019 team. If nothing else bad, a big if around here, happens between now and the start of the season, Georgia can say they've had two really bad events. One of them was Tyreek Stevenson transferring to Miami, which took away their number one cornerback, and the George Pickens injury. Those events, although bad, happened early enough that they had time to plan around. They had time to adjust. They had time to go to the transfer portal. And that's what you're banking on if you're Georgia.
Always great stuff from Seth Emerson from The Athletic. Seth, be well. Thank you very, very much. And we look forward to chatting again very soon.
Thanks, as always, Paul.
Outstanding. From Athens, Seth Emerson from The Athletic. Kirk Herbstreit and Dan Mullen later on, the athletic director at Tennessee State, where the big hire came yesterday. Mike Tannenbaum on the draft. We've got a lot to do today, and your phone calls are right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
And welcome back to our program. Great to have you here and a good conversation with Seth. Let's get back to the calls. And Tom is up next in Dallas. Tom, thanks. Good afternoon.
How you doing, Paul?
We are doing well. Thank you.
Yeah, there was discussion earlier about Mississippi State and Notre Dame in 77.
Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss. Unless my memory is wrong, I was tickled to death. I was a Notre Dame hater, so when Mississippi beat them, probably made me about as happy as did Mississippi fans. But I don't think Joe Montana was a starter at the time. It may not have mattered. But later on, Notre Dame really got on a roll after Montana. And the reason I remember that so well, I'm a Texas fan, and we were number one, and they come here and routed us in the Cotton Bowl, and that left it. I was hoping Alabama probably would benefit from it. I didn't want Notre Dame to, but they leapfrogged Alabama, Arkansas. I forgot who all they leapfrogged to get that title, but that's why it's all. But I could be wrong, but I think Montana took that job later on.
Yeah, I know Montana was the quarterback the next year. I'm checking right now about that game, and the problem what really was the heat. I think you're right. We'll double check. But Notre Dame won the national championship that year over Alabama when almost everyone thinks believe. I mean, Alabama lost at Nebraska. Notre Dame loses in Jackson at not a neutral site game, but still to an inferior Ole Miss team. It didn't make sense at the time. It still doesn't make any sense.
Well, it was a double whammy for me. Of course, being a Texas fan, I hated losing.
Right.
And then I hated to see Notre Dame. Now, do you remember that Arkansas had the big upset against Oklahoma.
Yeah, that was in 85, I believe.
Actually, 77 when Hopes had kicked the players off.
No, I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm thinking of...
That's okay.
You're right. There was a sexual assault charge against the players or something. Is that right?
Yes.
Right.
And,
okay.
But Hopes was pushing for them to win the title. Of course, Texas had held Oklahoma and Arkansas without a touchdown back-to-back games. But they just, you know, you lose your last game 38-10, and, boy, that's what people are going to remember. But, yeah, I think Alabama probably should have gotten it. I would have felt funny beating Arkansas and them winning the national title, but I probably would have preferred that over Notre Dame. But this is getting into...
No, I appreciate it very much. Hey, thanks for the call, Tom. Enjoyed it from Dallas, remembering the game in 1977. We tend to do that on this show. Jeremy is up next. Hello, Jeremy. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm well, Jeremy.
Hey, I heard Seth Emerson talking about the Georgia's loaded at wide receiver. I was wondering, who do they have at wide receiver that's productive? Other than Pickens.
Well, that's a question. I
can tell you it's nobody. Burton is decent, but other than Pickens, they don't have any productivity. Nothing proven anyway. They keep saying that every year. Their star tight end had 7 catches last year.
Right. I think it's a tremendous loss. Now, Jeremy, he made a really good point, though, and it may not matter, but when you have 6 months to prepare for the loss of a player, it makes it easier than when it happens in the middle of the season. I remember last year when Waddle went down.
Georgia fans will never tell you that. They're going to say how loaded they are at wide receiver, how loaded they are at tight end, how loaded they are at running back.
Well, last Georgia year when Waddle went down in Alabama, there were some prominent talking heads who said Alabama had no chance to win the title. So they found a way with a player that turned out to be more productive. Anyway, thanks for the call. Kelly is up next in Memphis. Hello, Kelly.
How are you doing, Paul? I was a student at Ole Miss in 77, majoring in radio, television, film, and I had a class with George Plaschidi, one of the media classes, and he told me be sure not to miss the game because he guaranteed a victory. He had he'd grown up in the suburbs of Chicago and grew up a Notre Dame fan and wanted to play football there forever, but they wouldn't recruit him, so he ended up at Ole Miss. And he had 15 tackles that day. This Plaschidi was about 5'10 and 185, you know, a little small guy for the defensive line, but he had a career day, and it was hot as blue blazes. I mean, the second half, Notre Dame players were dropping like flies. And on the bench that game was Montana. He didn't start till the next week. And LQ Smith caught a 48-yard screen pass. It was the first and only pass he caught while in Ole Miss Rebel. Those are some of the facts and reasons Ole Miss won. Evidently, I read later that Plaschidi gave an impassioned speech in the locker room before the game, which he says he doesn't remember. Plaschidi now is he's a professor at Auburn in the media department.
Oh, how interesting. That is fascinating. I didn't realize that.
He was in one or two of my classes at Ole Miss. Of course, I knew he was a football player, so I kind of sat near him because being a Rebel fanatic. But, he told me that day, it was a Thursday. I believe it was a Thursday or Tuesday before the game. I'm not sure why it's not to miss it, that he pulled a Joe Namath and told me that he guaranteed Ole Miss was going to win that game. But he was always a really nice fellow and stuff, but he was so tiny. I'm for a chief defensive end. And then another kid on the defensive line.
I apologize for Kelly. I hate to run. We're out of time, but thanks for sharing the story, and we are coming right back. Much more to go.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.